Maybe.
You keep playing with it. I'm going to start talking. All right, guys, thanks for being here. I am really, really happy to see a lot of you guys, and I'm glad that we didn't just get dads, because I think this is a topic that we can all talk about. I will be really honest. I'm a dad, but I'm definitely not an expert in this particular area. But I felt there are certain things that I want to talk about today, but I hope that we can really treat this more as a conversation, right? Like, I'd like to... I think we have a lot of great information. Am I in the wrong HDMI? Is that what's happening? Okay. All right. So how I want to start, you guys, is just in your experience, what is the world doing to dads in our modern time? Like, what is happening out there? Why do you think I'm concerned? Why are you concerned about dads and fathers at this time?
I think they're trying to kind of devalue what they bring.
Yeah. And examples. What do you mean by that? Like, how do they do that?
Just by saying, well, and I think in a way they're doing it to lift women. You don't do anything, you know, your husband, you don't need them. But when you do that, you devalue them. Even if you're trying to lift someone, you're devaluing what they bring to the table and their energy.
Yeah. Absolutely. We've all seen that, right? Like, definitely. What else? Let's go here and then here.
Welfare pays for men not to be involved in the family.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to the 60s, right, when we started transitioning that. It does cause some weird incentives that have removed fathers from many, many homes. Yes?
It used to be a social stigma to be a single mother. And now, if you haven't found the right person, you can just do in vitro. You can be a single mom. It's just... any and all options are out there.
Yeah.
You can have two dads. You can have two moms. Like, any and all options are out there.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? I thought I saw a hand here. Dustin,
I was just thinking, and I think it's kind of what everybody's saying, just that fathers are, men are useless, not needed, they're irrelevant.
Interesting. Yeah. Other thoughts? Go ahead.
And I know it's been talked about a lot. My wife, noticed over the years that in the movies, men are downsized. And
yeah.
It's been that way for years.
Who are our father figures in movies, television? Like, name a few of them. Like, what do they look like? What are they depicted as?
Homer Simpson.
Homer Simpson, right? Like, the ultimate father, right? That's one of them. Who else, though? There's others.
Mr.
Incredible.
They're
just jokesters. They're just there for entertainment, right? You go all the way back to Fred Flintstone, right? He was just kind of this bumbling doofus. Anybody watch Modern Family? Like Phil on Modern Family? Like, really, all of those depictions, thank you, appreciate it, are of this bumbling, kind of unnecessary person within those things, but they provide entertainment value. They're kind of a side shoot. Yeah, I like that. Dustin?
I think it even goes further than that. There's messages out there that saying that men are inherently evil, right? And that if, women just ruled the world, we would have peace and prosperity forever. It's even going beyond that. You're not needed, but you're also evil.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Because we almost went from bumbling to irrelevant to evil and, causing the problems.
Yeah.
I have seen, that's kind of the track that I've seen, at least. Any other thoughts or comments on that, of what is the world doing to attack dads and fathers? And it's not just men. I'm even specifically dads and fathers. What is the world doing to attack us? Any other thoughts on that? Yeah.
I think it's the question of seeking success in terms of money and career, less focus on family relationships.
Ooh, that's interesting. That's a really great, I don't think most of us think of that as being an attack on fatherhood, but absolutely, right? Like, there's something to that.
But it's also an attack on motherhood, that women need to be defined by financial success and doing it all.
Yeah. And I, as you said that, I just, maybe not for the first time, but just kind of thought, every attack on fatherhood is an attack on motherhood and womanhood, if you think about it, right?
I'm sorry, this has already been said. I came in a little late. I think just like watering down fatherhood, that like men and women are the same, and I think that that attacks women and men because you kind of water down their strengths into a less potent solution. And I definitely believe in like, co-parenting and equal responsibilities, but I think men and women are not.
Yeah.
It's important to accentuate those differences and maintain those strengths.
Thank you. Great. You guys, great insights. And so all of these things that we're talking about are kind of what a few years ago, I had never given this talk until about 2 years ago. I was going out to a conference in, I think it was in Cincinnati, and I had I didn't know how many people would show up. It was a big conference. So there were 5,000 or 6,000 people there. And I put up this, you know, Dads, We Need You. And I think every dad at the conference showed up at that talk. It was like probably 600 or 700 dads all together because this topic was just so like so pertinent. And I really do. I think it is. I think it's something that we have to be aware of and we have to fight back against that. And not only that, specifically within our homeschooling community and within a homeschooling life, which most of us are, I think probably most of us are living, unless maybe some of you guys are here kind of testing the waters to see how weird we are, which is okay. We're weird. But for most of us, we're living that homeschool life. And the reality is, even within this community, I have seen a little bit of I don't think it's a culture, but I think it is a thought process of men saying, I support my wife. I want her to be doing homeschooling. I'm so glad she's doing homeschool and I hope she does a great job at it. Right? Like it's almost like this, that's her thing and I'm so happy it's happening. But I don't know if that's right either. I really think that as we talk today, I think the importance of having a father, not only in the home, but involved in the homeschooling it can't be overstated. It really is incredibly important. So the world has convinced us that we don't need fathers. We don't need men, at least society. And this plays out, right? So we look at the birth rate, and this is in U.S. and the EU, and this is the number of individuals being born out of wedlock, right? So 1970 through 2016, obviously the overall birth rate has declined, but the number of people that are still having kids, we're increasing the number of them who are doing it alone, single mothers who are taking on that burden. There's a lot of factors I think that we could talk about that go into this, but definitely one of those is that we have devalued the importance of having a man. We've devalued the importance of having a father. This is births outside of marriage within the United States. So here's Idaho. I think we're at like 25% to 35%, somewhere in that bracket. Utah's 19% of births born out of marriage, out of wedlock. France in Europe, 60% of their births. And Mississippi in the United States, 55% of them are born. I think maybe France is one of the highest. I think Greece is maybe the lowest at like 11%. But worldwide, this has become a real problem for us. And the implications, so it's really fascinating, you guys, because we've been watching this happen for a lot of years, but we've known the negative effects of it almost the entire time, and yet we just almost ignore it. So just a couple of statistics that are crazy. So percentage of individuals in these situations that come from single mother homes. Homeless and runaways, 90% of them come from single homes, 85% of behavior disorders, 71% of teenage pregnancies, 71% of high school dropouts, and 85% of youth in prison come from single parent homes. And I don't want this to come off as a negative towards these mothers who are just doing the absolute most they possibly can. They are truly incredible. When I engage with these women who are all things to all people, they work and they try and they do all that they can. But the numbers, this is not new data. We have known this for a really, really long time. Here's a few more. this is the opposite. So children who have fathers involved, now the first one we don't really care about, but you get more A's, but they're 45% less likely to repeat a grade. They're 60% less likely to be suspended, 2 times as likely to go to college, 75% less likely to have a teen birth, and 80% less likely to spend time in jail. So it's not. That's right. So 20% chance. One of my kids. I'm trying to figure out which one of my. I have 5 kids. I'm like, okay, which one is it? So. You guys, it's not like we don't know the implications of this. The effects are real. And again, this is not this is not saying anything about those mothers. They are incredible, but it is saying something about what society has decided is okay. And we just accept this, and we keep moving on like it's not important. But it is. Having a father in the home, if you want to have a successful kid, which we all do, the number one factor is having a two-parent home. And I there's a lot of people that I think that rubs them the wrong way, but that is what the data tells us. There is no getting around that fact. Now, those are, of course, averages, right? So within individual situations, there's a lot of mothers, single mothers doing great things, a lot of single fathers that have great kids, and they turn out just fine. But as an average of society, that's the reality. So obviously something we need to work on and something we need to talk about. So how do we engage with this as homeschoolers? Because none of this is. By the way, I always start this with a caveat. I better start with my little disclaimer. The fact, fathers, that you are sitting here on a Saturday morning at 11:45 at a homeschool conference in the middle of a snowstorm tells me that you're not the people that I'm speaking to. Okay, but I'm still going to talk to you because you know people that this does apply to. And so your charge today is maybe to learn a couple things for yourself, maybe a couple ways you can improve what you're doing, but your real charge is to take this out and share it with others, because you're not the ones that I'm most concerned about and that any of us are concerned about. It's a lot of those other families that we need to be working with. You guys, the first thing is a little bit of a gut punch for me, and maybe it is for you, because I love entrepreneurship and starting businesses, and I always have like 30,000 things going in my life. And for a long time, we were told some of the data in the late 80s, 90s, even up through the 2000s, indicated that they would do the studies of fatherhood and the amount of time that they spend with their kids. And a lot of that data indicated that it wasn't about how much time you spent with them. It was really more about the quality of time. Did we ever hear that, like, quality of time idea? I did, and I was like, this is so awesome because I can still do all of those other things. Unfortunately, the more recent data, and as they've reanalyzed the data from the past, you guys, it's not about the quality of time. It's fully about the quantity of time. Quality also has an effect, but not as big of an effect as quantity of time. The amount of time that we spend shoulder to shoulder with our kids has a huge, huge impact. Now, if it's, then you, when you get the quantity right, then you can start negotiating quality, okay? But we've got to get the quantity right first. Yes?
I think it needs to be said that there's a difference between being physically present and being mentally present. And so whether that falls under the quality of the time or not, does it really count if they're not emotionally present?
I think to me, and I think the data holds this up, is that that would fall into quality. So, there's a really interesting phenomenon. If you go in and you look at some of the situations, even in abusive relationships, so not good quality time, the fact that the father is there actually has some positive influence on whole. Now, that's not for extreme abuse situations, right? But even a father that's maybe a little rough around the edges, a little old school, not maybe the best quality emotional connection, but the fact that they're there seems to have great implications. And that plays out, it's another, again, another interesting thing. That's more true for our daughters than it is for our sons. having a father there for daughters, you guys, it cannot be overstated how important that is because of the role that they play in that feeling of protection, that feeling of dad's got my back, like that for daughters. So if you look at some of the data on how early a girl first engages in sexual activity, very, very much correlated with whether or not there's a dad there and how much time that they're spending with them. So I would go back. I think it's quality, the quantity, but absolutely 100%. We also have to engage emotionally and be part of that. So any other questions or comments at this point? Yeah.
Yeah, but with the sons, doesn't the date also prove all-time jail more than socioeconomic, than race, more than anything else, it's father present?
Yeah. That was some of the graphs we first showed here just a minute ago.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's the amount, it's being there. Yep. Absolutely. Other comments or questions? Okay. So you guys, today what I want to talk a little bit about is, I'm going to move to something else. I want to talk about how we as dads, so this is kind of why we're here, and what we can do, and I want to put out a few things that I think as fathers we can do to be more engaged, and we can maybe, and moms, I'm glad you're here, because actually this first slide is for you. But how we can maybe be a little bit more engaged and be involved and how we can help our kids and benefit them. This, I'm pretty sure that my talk, unless I just really get off on like crazy stories, is not going to take the whole time. And I'd like to spend some time maybe engaging and having a few more conversations. But let me go through a few things first, if that's okay. So there's this interesting phenomenon in my house. So this is a dishwasher. For the first 23 years of my life, I was really, really good at loading dishes. Like, I could do it without any problems. It wasn't like I put my dish off, I'd rinse it, and I'd put it in the dishwasher, and somehow it got clean. It was really interesting. I turned 23, and I got married, and all of a sudden, I must have forgotten. I must have just, like, somehow I no longer know how to load a dishwasher. In fact, until today, like even this last week, I ventured to put a dish into the dishwasher, and it was totally wrong, unbeknownst to me, until afterwards. And my wife came along and notified me that I don't know how to load a dishwasher. And so I don't know what happened, you guys, but there's this weird phenomenon in my house. Does anybody else have this phenomenon? Okay, yeah. I don't know what it is. I swear I used to know, but I just don't anymore. But I tell that anecdote because it's funny, in homeschool, we see a little bit of, now, I'm totally fine with my wife telling me I do the dishes wrong, because I usually do. I went way too much for hurry. I don't rinse them the way I should. I understand all of that. But there's this interesting phenomenon that I see in homeschool that we need to try to stop. And what it is that moms, you guys are very, very involved and engaged with the homeschool. You guys have a plan, right? You know what should be happening. And in comes dad, who's not maybe part of that whole plan, and he starts doing things a little bit different. And all of a sudden, it feels like, oh my gosh, he's blowing it. He's ruining the homeschool experience for my kids. But here is the point. If you go back to what we just talked about, the presence of dad in and of itself has an impact. The fact that he's there has an impact. And here's what I have found is that the more that we tell dad he's doing it wrong, the less engaged he becomes. The more often we say, don't do it that way, don't, like, the less inclined. Going back to the dishwasher story, in a very real way, I don't load the dishes very often because every time I do, Elizabeth's like, it was done wrong. And I'm like, okay, I'll try again sometime, but maybe not tomorrow. But the same thing is happening in our homeschooling, which is moms recognize you don't want another mom homeschooling your kids with you. You don't want another you. The benefits are not the same as if you have a dad coming in and doing that. And so you've got to let dad do it his own way. When dad comes in and he doesn't want to do math, he wants to throw a kid against the wall on a mattress, let him throw the kid on the mattress, right? Like, the dad has his unique thing to add. And dads, fight through that tendency to not be it because you don't want to mess it up. It's not about messing it up or not messing it up. Your kids need you in whatever form that is, and whatever it looks like, they need you to be there. They just need to feel like you're involved and engaged and part of it. And if your wife gets after you because you did a little bit wrong, just let it run off your shoulders and be okay with that. You'll load a dish another day, right? Like, you just got to keep trying. You got to keep pushing forward, because the benefit of having you there doing it your way far outweighs everything else. And you guys, I'm very serious when I say your kids do not need another mother. They need dad. And they need to get some scrapes. And they need to ride motorcycles. And they need to climb hills. And they need to fall down and break bones sometimes. Like, those are all things that are long-term. Like, obviously, sure, if dad's doing something truly crazy, stop him, right? Like, my wife sometimes is like, you should really put a helmet on that kid, right? Like, flying along on my motorcycle with them in the front doing wheelies. Like, it's time to put a helmet on. That's okay. But my wife will never say, don't take the kid on the motorcycle and do wheelies. She just says, let's try to be safe about doing that, right? Like, they just let them do it their way. I had a comment or a question right here.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I know this is the topic, but the same applies to kids, right? If we're constantly berating because they don't do it the way we would do it, they're just going to stop trying.
Yeah.
Right? And my second comment maybe is a completely different seminar, maybe a little too controversial, but are gender roles okay? Is it okay to have identified specific gender roles within the home?
You know, I think that question, or do you have an answer to that? Maybe you should answer that.
I'm just dropping the bomb.
Just blow up the whole thing. Yeah. No, take this, Nephi. Gender.
And you got it.
I'm just kidding. So what I would say is, like, we can have all of our religious and our political discussions about that, but if we just stick to what we know seems to work, right? What we know for generations, and even in the data that we have now of what kids benefit from, they very much benefit from a mom and a dad. That's just information, right? Like, you take that from whatever you want. We can argue about it in other circles. As far as gender roles, doesn't seem to have as much of an impact, right? Like, dad can wash dishes and mom can ride motorcycles, and that's all okay. But having them both there doing their own thing seems to be the key.
So it doesn't matter what the role is.
It can be different in every family. I think there's some flexibility in that, right? So, that's hopefully I caught that grenade and okay.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm just kidding. I actually really love the conversation. I love that topic. I would talk about it a lot more. I have more to say about it, but that's great. Any other questions or comments about what we just talked about? Yeah.
Well, I just think it comes to a point in the kid's life, too, that there's just some things that they have to learn from the dad that the mom can't teach, you know, or what.
Does it infuriate you sometimes? Is it frustrating? So there's this weird phenomenon in my house, and this is, like, just an anecdote, but my wife will just, like, there's something that she's trying to do. There's something broken, and she's working on it and working on it and working on it. She's just so flustered, and she's done it 1,000 different times. And finally, so I work from home. And so finally, after a period of time, she'll be like, Nephi, calm down here. And I'll walk into the room, and all of a sudden it starts working. And she's like, ah, or I'll touch it, and it starts working. And there's, like, I don't know what, it's just the timing of it. But I think that a little bit applies to that as well, right? It can be a little bit frustrating. And my wife, she and I have kind of had to come to this. It's not even like certain topics. Sometimes certain kids learn differently from me than from her. Sometimes it's, and the same, and vice versa is right? Like, some of my kids, maybe we butt heads a little bit more, and maybe some other ones butt heads with mom. Like, but having us both there dynamically able to participate in that is so, so beneficial. And so when we notice those things, instead of being offended, instead of being like, oh, that just flusters me, or instead of being like, we should just be so grateful. We should be just so grateful that our kids have both of them, and that we can be like, come out. And the kids are like, dad gets to do it? Yes. Right? And, it is such a huge blessing. Thank you for that comment. Other comments or thoughts? Let's go here and then we'll go to the middle. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there's data coming out right now about how
for example, 0 to 7 years old, kid's very dependent on mom. Okay, 0 to 7 is a mom phase, 7 to 14 is a dad phase, and then 7 to 21, so it goes in 7 year increments, and then, sorry, 14 to 21 is friends. And whichever one influences them most is where they tend to be after 21. So, you know, there's daddy's boys, there's mama's boys, for example, or girls, you know. And then there's kids that just don't resonate to their family, they go to friends always. And so I think that, right, if you have a single family, for example, it's hard for mom to be the first 7 and then the second 7 because that's traditionally where dad would be, right? And so, again, just having that equilibrium of dad and mom, whether you're there quality or quantity, you know, and then it's whichever experience they tend to resonate with best is kind of where they end up in after their, you know, prefrontal cortex is all developed and stuff. And so
it's interesting. They ran this study. So this is just a confirming study. We all know this already. But they ran a study where they took young kids and they did functional MRI on them, and they would sit the kids in this situation in a little bit of a sensory deprivation, and they would have audio that would be piped in. And they would pipe in audio of music and maybe some voices, and they would watch how the brain reacted to that. And then they would put in mom or dad's voice. And it was interesting for these young kids. Their brains would literally light up when they heard their parents' voices. It was like this incredible, like, oh, that's mom and dad. Listen closely. Like, it was really cool. Well, they took those kids and 16 years later, they brought them back at 16-year-olds, and they did the exact same thing. And so music and all of these things, mom and dad's voices, nothing happened to their brains. It was like nothing. But then they took the voices of their friends and put it in, and their brains would light up. So in a very real sense, in a biological sense, our kids don't listen to us as they get older. But the point is that eventually it does revert back, and it does go back, and their brains do light up as they get older, to mom and dad again. And so just be patient in that. Be patient in that conversation. Comment here.
I just wanted to mention, I'm the one that loads the dishwasher correctly.
You're the one. I've heard about you.
No, I find that, you know, mom's engaged in working with the child, or in our case, a child. And I'm around, so when I'm around, it's okay for me to load the dishwasher. And she appreciates it.
Yeah.
And the son sees that. So when he goes to other people's houses, he's all about helping, you know, do the dishes.
What a great example. That's awesome. I love that. Let's talk about another topic for a little bit, you guys. So, any bowlers out there? I'm an awful bowler. I like to bowl, but I'm awful at it. So, I try to do the little spinny thing. I don't know how to do it, so I try to spin the ball, and it always ends up in the gutter. So we were out bowling, and we got out, and my youngest son, we're like, hey, we'll put the bumpers up for you. And he's like, bumpers? And I'm like, I don't want bumpers. I'm like, no, it's okay. Like, he's 7, right? Like, it's okay to have bumpers. I don't want bumpers, Dad. He was all loud, defiant. And so we get bowling, and I mean, it's just gutter ball after gutter ball after gutter ball after gutter ball. And you could see my son getting so frustrated. And he just, at the end of the day, he's like, I don't want to go bowling anymore. It's not fun. Why would you guys want to do that? And it was so interesting because my other kids who had, you know, started with bumpers, and some of them even that day were like, yeah, put up the bumpers. I still want bumpers. And they had a great time bowling. But my other son, who was just so resistant, this idea that having any boundary at all, was like, no, I'm good enough. I don't need it. He had a really negative experience. And you guys, as fathers, we have this role of boundary setter, right? We are the bumpers. And especially as our kids get older and we get into those years where their brains don't light up when they hear our voices, right? In that period of time, our kids are going to press out. They don't want bumpers. They don't want curfews. They don't want restrictions. They don't want to, like, they don't want any of that at all. But what we know is that when they don't have it, it is actually not just, they don't just make bad decisions and have negative experiences. It actually affects them emotionally and mentally. Their mental state is affected. Now, this is especially true of our young women, our girls. When they don't have these bumpers, and dad, when they don't have bumpers from dad, mentally, they deal with more anxiety and depression and suicidal thoughts. It's a direct correlation. Now, I don't think there's causation there, but there is some correlation that we've seen between those two ideas. Our young people need, our daughters especially, but our sons as well, they want to run as fast and as hard as they can at the limits that we've set and slam into them just as hard as they possibly can and drive us absolutely crazy in doing that. But when they're not there, it has a very negative effect. When they bounce off of them, it causes some contention. It causes some, maybe some discussions that we don't want to have with those kids, but it keeps them there. And in a mental way, in a mental state, it protects them. Not only from the making bad decisions of going out and doing something physical, but it literally mentally protects them from those, that anxiety and depression. And that's just real. So dads, we've had this role for a long time. We have to set boundaries. Especially for our daughters, they need to know that there are things that they cannot do. And when they cross that line, there are consequences. That one thing alone will have an impact on their emotional and mental health. And you have to hold firm to them. Because if they run as hard and as fast as they can into that, and they have this big confrontation because they don't need that, and you move that bumper, you've just lost all of the benefit that you had. We can't move it. We've got to hold the bumpers in place. And as we do that, they're going to be frustrated with us for a long time. But we're protecting them in a very real way for the rest of their life. And so dads, you've got to hold firm. You've got to set the boundary. You've got to hold it. You've got to be the one. Okay? Moms, you can also do this. Obviously, you also have to hold those boundaries. But there is something unique in having dads set those boundaries. And I think with the young women, it has a lot to do with, I mean, just take a scenario, right? A girl meets this boy who's, she really likes, she thinks he's cute, and she really wants to go out with him, but he's made some bad decisions in the past. He's one of these kids that maybe she's kind of like, I kind of want to go out with him because he's popular and he's cute, but I don't know if I should be going out with him because he's done some things to some other girls. And so she's like, she's not capable of making all of the decisions within that. She's not capable of analyzing that from a full perspective, right? She's driven by a very narrow window. And so even though in the back of her mind, she's like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, her desire to do that pushes forward. And so she's like, I'm going out with this person. And she comes and she's like, I'm going out with this person. She's a 13, 14 year old. And dad says, no, you don't date anybody until you're whatever age, right? Like 15, 16, 17, whatever it is. She, 25, I like that. Once your frontal cortex is developed, then what do you think? but whatever that means, but then she comes and she's like, she's going to run headlong into you. She's like, Dad, I've got to date this boy. I've got to do this. You've got to let me, you've got to change it. You've got to do this. And if dad holds firm, she feels protected. She feels validated. She feels important. She feels special. She feels like a princess. Now, she doesn't say that to you because the other words she says are not those words. But in the back of her mind, there's a place that she does feel that. But when she comes to dad as hard as she can, as fast as she possibly can, and says, Dad, I've got to date this guy, and you move that boundary, you're like, okay, then she's like, in some level, she's like, why wouldn't dad protect me? Why doesn't dad want to keep me from making this kind of a decision? Why doesn't dad? It's not logical, but it's very real. So please hold those boundaries. Any comments on that? Any maybe experiences or comments you'd like to share?
Is anything with daughters logical?
He said, is anything with daughters logical? Yes, in the back here.
I'm holding back the tears because my father just didn't care, you know? So I went and I found fulfillment somewhere else. And it was the wrong thing to do. But years later, I realized why I had to go to find another man to fulfill all of those things that you're talking about. And I was so mad that he never seemed to care or protect. And then when I would present whatever man it was for marriage, he'd just pat me on the head. Oh, that's great, sweetie. He seems like a great guy. And I'm like, where's the daddy bear in you? Where is the... Let me test this guy to see if he's even... So that was
interesting, but all the things yeah. that you're talking about.
And it's not always a conscious thing, right? Like in the time, you probably don't feel that, but in retrospect, it becomes more obvious. Right. So dads, you know, the old wait for them with a shotgun is real, right? Like it's totally fine. Like you be that dad. Be that dad. It's okay and it's fine and it's helpful.
So looking at the amount of gray hair that's in this room, and so how can grandfathers support fathers in their role in what you're describing?
That's a great question. Do you have any thoughts on that? Let me think about it for a minute. Let you speak for a second. I'm not a grandfather yet. I might look like it. I do have some gray hairs.
The concern that I have is when we've raised our children, we homeschooled our kids, and they're doing the best that they can. They're making some great decisions. They got great families. And we're wanting to be that support for them. We're wanting, and yet they're still learning. They're still our children, and they're learning and growing on a different, another level now. So, trying to be a resource there for them, and yet we're seeing in some members of our family where that education, that influence, isn't as positive. And so, how, as a grandfather, can I still be in there without getting in and trying to take over?
Yeah.
And
obviously, you can't step in and set the boundaries, right? Like that's not a role you can provide. You can provide some of the other roles, some of the other influences, but they're still your kids, and you got to just keep teaching. You just got to keep sharing and teaching and being that example and doing that. I see a lot of hands popping up, so let's go to the back here, and then right here, these two. So go ahead.
I know for my husband, his dad is probably one of the number one people he looks up to. And what his dad says has a ton of influence on what he decides to do still. And so I think being educated about things as a grandfather and continuing to learn, continuing to, figure out how to do things better can still make a huge difference in your kid's life. When they come with questions or even just when they passively watch what's going on in your home between you and your wife, between you and grandkids, when they come over and visit, that can make a huge difference. And then the other thing I just want to say is the time still, I think, is so important. Not just the time for the grandkids, but still making time for your kids. Because I know that can be hard sometimes for my husband if his dad's been really involved with certain grandkids and doesn't have time for him still. You know what I mean? If he has something going on, he's like, Dad, I really need to talk. And he's like, oh, sorry, I got to run off to so-and-so's game, or I got to go do this. And which is great to, be there for those grandkids, but to still hold some space for when your adult kids need you and want to be with you separate from,
Yeah, great insight. Right here.
Me?
Yeah.
So I know as a father of three boys that are married and have kids and have grandkids, I can't just go tell them you've got to and remember how I did this. And or I'll push them away, but I kind of give them information and I don't tell them what to do with it. So it gives them control.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when this happens, I've done this, period.
Yeah.
And don't tell them what to do with it. Let them have that control.
Yeah, teaching principles. I love that. Right here.
Coming from someone that had, as a teenager, my father was very absent in my life. And then later, I didn't have my grandfather in my life. But when he, as a young 20-year-old, I was able to then meet my grandfather, and he stood firm to what he believed, and I didn't have a strong father figure in my home, but knowing when I got to know my grandfather, and I got to know him and what he believed, and it was almost like I could then connect to him, even though the relationship wasn't there with my father, I had that relationship because he was my grandfather, period. And he didn't have to do anything except he was my grandfather. And then it's like he was making up for lost time. Like, he was then able to hey, this is what we taught in our family. And for some reason it didn't trickle down, but this is what a father does, and this is what a grandfather does, and you are a part of our family, and you are strong because of this. And that influence, it's it's internal, you know, like it, that connection is there regardless. And I think that grandparents are so important, even if it's only like long distance relationships, even if it's, you know, through letters or the time that those grandparents are there with their grandkids, even if I was a 20-year-old, you know, and much of the growing up had been done, but that influence, just that connection,
still
a strong, not really father figure, but a strong figure in my life was huge.
Yeah,
it's so important.
Yeah, thank you. Right here.
In response to that, the first one is time, spending time with the grandkids, whether it's an educational capacity or just like doing a tea party or doing field trips or going to the zoo and just making those memories with the grandkids, but also that time that you're spending with them might give the adult children time to decompress or regroup, or just having a break sometimes will help the situation, and they figure it out on their own if they get a little off time. And then the other one is the example. And even if you can see that maybe their relationships aren't going the right way or you would do things differently, if those grandkids can look at their grandparents and see the way that he treats his wife, that they can see the way that they have family relations, they see the way that they communicate, and you know, maybe they don't see that in a parent, maybe they don't see that in a sibling, but they have the example of, this is how grandpa treats everyone, this is how you know, grandma has unconditional love for everyone in the family, even the black sheep that everybody else talks about, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
Whether it's then or later, that still sets that example for them.
Perfect. Thank you so much for those insights. Let's shift gears a little bit. So the next topic is completely different and not nearly touchy-feely, so I hope that's okay. Boom, another grenade, right? Okay, so I don't want to be known as the AI guy. Like, that's not the only thing I talk about, but there is something happening in the world right now. So we know, have known for a long time, the detrimental effects of pornography. So regardless of what your religious ideas are, I think we can all agree that pornography addiction is bad, right? Like, that's, we can go that far at least.
Can I just say?
Yeah.
Whenever we have a discussion about porn, I think it's important to define pornography. It's not simply nudity. It is any image, video, song, lyric that elicits those strong sexual emotions. Pornography can be quite literally anything, right? It can be an ad for a video game. It can be the Victoria's Secret catalog. There are varying degrees.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that clarity on that as well. But what I want to talk about is pornography has been a tough thing for all of us for a really long time, right? Pornography is powerful for, I think there are really three reasons that it's so addictive. One of them is, and I call them the three A's, it's very affordable. It's the most affordable addiction we can possibly have. It costs nothing, right? And it has the same addictive properties as much more illicit things that we have out there. So it's affordable. It's available, right? Like, it is right in front of us. It's easy to access at all times. And even, you know, even with filters and all of those other things, our kids are going to see those things. It's available all the time. We can't do anything about the fact that it's affordable. Can't change that. That's the business model that it has. We really can't do anything about the fact that it's available. The third A, though, is that the other reason that it's such a powerful thing and it's so addictive is that it is anonymous. It's normally done in a very private setting. That's the one area that we actually have a chance of trying to stop these pornography addictions and stop our kids from diving into that. The fact that it's anonymous, it happens in secret, is a very powerful thing that allows kids to sit and go way, way, way down the road, much farther than we think, without any sort of interaction with us about that. So what I've always taught you guys is that the most important thing we can do to help our kids and to help ourselves is, on a weekly basis, you need to have someone that you're accountable to. There has to be an accountability, some sort of a person that you can be 100% honest with that. I know within like religious culture, it's been a very taboo thing. We're like, don't talk about pornography. If you're addicted to pornography, you're a bad person, etc., etc. That's not the reality at all. We have very good people who get stuck in this because it's affordable, it's available, and it's anonymous. And so we have to remove that layer of anonymity. On a weekly basis, I sit down with my sons and my daughters and my wife. With my sons and my daughters, I say, what did you see this week? What happened? And they tell me, and we try to be 100% honest. And that's in literature. That's in things that they saw on the internet as they were searching. That's the movies that they saw. Anything that they saw that they want to talk to me about is 100% open. And they need that. And they need to not feel like they're going to be judged. So when my kids tell me, I was searching and something popped up, it is not, oh my gosh, it's nothing. I'm like, oh man, I'm sorry that happened. What did you do next? It's a very calm, level conversation. The worst thing that could possibly happen is that my kid thinks that I think they're a bad person because that happened, and then they're going to move it back into anonymity. We have to remove that layer of secrecy. And the more we can do that, the better off we're going to be. Now, that is also pertinent for us as adults and with our wives. Every week, I have that same conversation with my wife. And I lay out, I say, Elizabeth, this is what happened. It was about 6 months ago. I was traveling, and I was, I travel quite a bit. And so I go to hotels. I'm tired at the end of the day. I sat down. I want to watch there was a football game or some game that was on. And I sat down, and I ordered some food off of Grubhub. And I was waiting for it, and I started clicking through to find the game. And I went through the HBO channels, and there was this pornographic thing happening. I turned it off, and I called my wife. Because I cannot sit a day with that, because it's just too much of a... There's anonymity in that, and there just can't be any of it. And so I've learned this with many, many, many different people, that anonymity is the power that we can control. Can't control availability, affordability, you can control anonymity. So remove that. So that's what I normally say about pornography, but today I want to go just a little bit deeper, okay? And, yeah, go ahead.
Would it be okay to have the dad and the mom in the room with that kid too every week, or is it better just to be the dad?
It depends on the kid.
Okay.
Yeah, judge the relationships and judge the openness. Sometimes when something real pops up, sometimes my son doesn't want mom to be there as he talks about it.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about masturbation and other things as well. So it's like, it's a little bit more of a sensitive thing. And sometimes it's just me, but sometimes it's both of us. You guys, we are, again, I don't want to be the AI guy, but we've got to talk about this as it relates to this subject. Think about what's happening with artificial intelligence. The future, and this is not me speaking, this is some of the top guys in software development and AI development, talking about their fears of what's going to happen when we start connecting artificial intelligence with pornography. The sad reality is that most of our advancements in technology over the last 50 years have happened because the pornography industry has gotten behind a certain industry and driven that change. There's enough dollars there that they have driven a lot of the change in what's happening. So let's envision a very real future, and the likelihood of this happening is probably like 99.9%. Imagine a future where you sit down and you log into some virtual world, right? It's a very real virtual world. It's generated by artificial intelligence. It's 100% live generated by artificial intelligence. You guys may not have seen this, but last week at CES, which is the big tech conference, one of the presenters put up an image. It was a video. It was a video game preview. You guys have seen like these really intricate video game previews. They had taken like 50 images along a sequence of what they thought would happen for this whole thing. They took 50 images and they handed that to an AI agent. And then in real time, the agent created a 5-minute video that connected all of those images. Not pre-processed. It was doing it in real live time. And it was incredible, the detail of that video. And so like one out of every 50 frames was preset. And then the 49 other frames, the AI just generated right in that second. Like we are there with that technology already. So you sit down, you log into something, and you have a, you know, you have this desire to see something pornographic, and so the AI generates the perfect situation, the perfect person. Imagine the most beautiful person you've ever seen that the AI knows that you will like. That's the person that you get to engage with, right? And not only are they beautiful and have all of the qualities that you so desire, they're not like real people. They don't have any imperfections. When you're a knucklehead, they're not going to call you out on being a knucklehead. All they're going to do is cater to your every desire, everything that they know that you want from all of the data that they have. And so that experience becomes 100% driven by you and what you want, with none of the other, like, stuff that we have to deal with as humans, right? Our relationships, or a real human relationship, is sometimes messy. And sometimes we don't, there's days where I'm like, Elizabeth, you go over there and I'm going to go over here, right? But that's not the world that you'll have in this AI version. It's going to be this perfect person that always, always, always thinks you are the best thing ever. Now, that alone, think how addictive that is going to be. Now you take the next step, which is being developed, right? We're in the world where haptics are being developed. Haptics, what that means is something that you wear that will provide sensations to you. And you know where that's going to go, right? So you have this virtual image happening in front of your face with the exact sensations happening physically to you. And you can already start to see where that's going to go. Now, if we think regular pornography is addictive, this is an entirely new level of what's going to be happening. And like I said, the chances of this happening are almost 100%. And so, in a very real sense, you guys, not only do we need to be worried about, hey, we need to personally not fall into this, we have to erase that anonymity layer and fight against pornography, we have to be very, very aware. We have to teach our kids what's coming, and we have to give them reason to not just be in that world. It's so addictive, you guys, that the guy that was talking as I was watching this, he said, I don't see a reason why any human being would ever have an actual relationship. And I don't see a reason why a human being would ever not want to be in that simulation. And I can see that. I could see a world where that's so good and it's so fulfilling and it's so pleasurable that there's no other reason to do anything else. So that's the kind of scary stuff that I think about at night sometimes. But we have to be aware that it's happening. I don't know all the answers. I don't know how we fight against it exactly. But we definitely have to give our kids, we have to help them be so engaged in the real world that this doesn't hold the same weight. They have to love all of the other stuff so much that they just don't need the pornography. I tied to my last class this fact that addiction is not just being exposed to something. It's not the fact that you look at a pornographic image that makes it addictive. It's addictive because you're lonely and you're bored and you're anxious and you're depressed, and then you go and see that and it makes this connection and you're like, now all of that stuff went away for a little bit because I saw this image or this video. That must be the answer. And that's what the brain starts to think. That's what causes the addiction. And so we have to try to eliminate. Eliminate's not a good word. We have to help our kids fight through that anxiety and the boredom and the depression and live in a world that's good enough that this won't have the addictive nature that it could.
This is just dovetailing so well with the anti-fragile, or whatever that word was.
Yeah, great book. That's a wonderful book. If you haven't read Anti-Fragile.
And teaching them it's okay to be bored for a few minutes. It's okay that you don't have any friends to play with today. It's okay that relationships are messy. And you've got to kind of teach that yin and the yang of you could never have friends, then you would never fight with them, and you'd never, and yeah, you would be bored or whatever, or yeah, you could do this, but here's the flip side of it.
Yeah.
And yes, these artificial relationships could be very fulfilling, but you're not going to have a child with them. You're not going to, have that development and that growth and that real life experience. And they need to because they're you're supposed to be entertained all the time and all this stuff.
That's the world we live in, right?
Okay, it's okay.
It's all right to sit a little bit. It really is. It's totally fine.
It's okay to sit in the mess.
How do we do that? How do we help with this a little bit, dads? One of the things that I found is that as our kids get older, it's interesting. As they get into these older years, great, huge changes are happening in their life. They have big decisions coming, a lot of things changing that are dynamic. And oftentimes they're trying to figure out what they're going to do next in their life, go to school or whatever. And they look over and they see dad or mom, and sometimes dad, and dad is so, dad's life seems the same every single day. Dad goes to work, he comes home, he sits, he does this. And so there's almost this, well, dad can't possibly understand because his life is, he's already made all the decisions. It's done, right? Dad's dead, right? But in a real sense, there can be a little bit more conflict because of that. And so what we as dads, one thing I think that we really need to focus on, our kids need to know that we still have dreams and aspirations. We're still accomplishing things. We have goals. We're driving towards things. A few years ago, I went out and I decided to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And one of the main reasons I did that, I've dreamed about it, but one of the main things I wanted to be able to come back and say to my kids is, you can do these things. It's awesome. You can climb Mount Kilimanjaro. You can do great things. I wrote a book a few years ago called Katie Bell and the Wishing Well. And I did that because I had things to say to my kids, but also because I wanted them to see, dad's not an author. He's an engineer. He can't write to save his life. But they saw me get up at 4:30 in the morning for 9 months in a row to write a book that was for them. Now, that message and that lesson is important. They see that dad is still trying. He's still doing things. So I don't know what it is for you dads, but you've got to demonstrate to your kids that there is still so much happening that you do understand because you're still a work in progress. And there's still great things that you're trying to accomplish. Last thing I want to talk about, and then we'll quit. You guys, it goes back a little bit to what we talked about earlier, about letting dad be dad. Dads, we need to, I feel like at least within the homeschool setting, at least once a semester, you need to be teaching at least one thing per semester to your kids. Like, I know that we're busy, I know that we have to go out and we have to do a lot of things, but there's got to be something you're teaching your kids. And my recommendation is this: teach them something that you absolutely love or are passionate about. Because they need to see that passion. They need to see what you're interested in. Do the dad things that you like. Whatever it is, whether it's outdoor survival, whether it's mechanic on, we bought a Mustang actually it's been 3 years. My wife reminded me the other day, we've been working on it for 3 years, but it feels like two because nothing's been done. But we bought it because we're going to restore it together. A 1967 Mustang that we're going to restore together. My kids go out there with me. We cut metal out and we do things. None of them really love it. They're not like, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life, but they see that I'm so excited. And every time they come out, I'm like, I am so glad you guys came out to work on the Mustang with me. And we have a great time out there doing that. But we've got to be teaching them on a regular basis and demonstrating passion. More important than the what you're teaching is that demonstration that you love this thing. And that it's awesome, and that there are things that they can be passionate about in their lives as well. You guys, it really is, we all know this, but this whole thing is just about, it's about our families. It's about time. It's about the amount of time we get to the more I've gone along and the more days I walk on this earth, the more I realize that it's not money, it's not any of those things. I would pay an immense amount of money to be able to spend more time with these little kids. I think about, so my oldest is 17, my youngest is 7, I've got about 10 years. I would pay an inordinate amount of money to be able to spend time with them. And in fact, about 10 years ago, I left a really, really good corporate job and took about half of the money as an income to be able to work from home and be with my kids. And I was calculating it the other day, if I had stayed with that job, like the raises and all the things that would have happened, I've given up about $4 million to leave that job and come home. But it's the best $4 million I've ever spent. It's been so awesome to be with my family. And I'm so grateful I could do that. Dads, we need you. We need you to come home. In a very real sense, we're living in a world where you can come home. I think that we've been given tools and technology where you can make that happen in most situations. I'm not saying you have to quit your jobs and be home all the time, but I'm just saying we need to be present and be home. So thank you guys for your time today. Thank you for all your comments. I appreciate it. Good. It's like one of those near and dear things to your heart, you know. Yeah. So
I'm gonna steal the recording. Thanks.